Welcome to Building Reddit. I'm your host, Ryan H. Lewis. Reddit has hundreds of software engineers that build the code that delivers cat pictures to your eyeballs every day. But there's another group of engineers at Reddit that empowers those software engineers and ensures that the site is available and performant. And that group is Site Reliability Engineering at Reddit. They are responsible for improving and managing the company's infrastructure tools, working with software engineers to empower them to deploy software, and making sure we have a productive incident process. And so in this episode, Nathan Handler, a senior site reliability engineer at Reddit, will share how he got into site reliability engineering, what site reliability engineering even means, and how it has evolved at Reddit. Here's our conversation. All right. Well, Nathan, thank you for joining the podcast. Please introduce yourself to everyone.
Thanks, Ryan. My name is Nathan Handler. I work as a site reliability engineer here at Reddit, where I've been for the past 3 years. During my time here, I've helped out with our video team. I've been heavily involved with our R Place annual project. And I've spent a lot of time working in the realms of IAM and compliance and assisting with our security teams, as well as around our management of cloud infrastructure as code.
That's cool. R Place, video, infrastructure as code, all things I like. So if you could explain it in layman's terms, what is site reliability? Like, those are words that kind of could mean one thing, but I feel like there's a specific meaning they have. How would you describe what site reliability like means?
You're absolutely right. Site reliability can mean different things depending on the company that you're referring to. At Reddit, site reliability engineers have the mission to scale Reddit engineering to predictably meet Reddit's user experience expectations. And by that, it typically means that we work closely with our various product teams around the scalability and overall availability of their services. So the product teams are in charge of developing all the new features that you've grown to love using on Reddit. But it doesn't really matter if we develop the best features if they crash the minute a user tries to access it, or if they can't scale to meet the very large demand that our communities place on it there. So our job is to work with them to make sure that everything works as expected.
Yeah, I feel like back in the day, Reddit used to go down a lot more. Now you get news articles when Reddit goes down, but it used to be that it was just expected, I guess, that Reddit would be down some amount of time.
We've put a lot of resources into that space. It's taken a few forms. Part of that has been around our incident management procedures. We've gotten a lot better about formalizing those practices internally so that all of our on-call engineers are aware of what is an incident, how do we go about coordinating all of our responders, how do we go about communicating the current status to stakeholders, and ultimately working together to get everything working again in a timely and efficient manner. So we've combined efforts around incident management with better tracking of availability, rollout of service level objectives or SLOs across the company. And all of this has allowed us to focus our efforts on the areas of our stack that are less reliable than we might normally like and get them to more acceptable levels.
It seems like there's, like what you just talked about, there's a lot of like processes, there's a lot of, it's a very kind of important, but also broad profession, I guess you could say. I'd love to hear about how you personally got involved with software and then how that, like what interests you in site reliability engineering, kind of how you got into that.
Sure. Back in middle school, I got access to my first computer. It was this old, even for the time, tiny laptop. It didn't even have built-in Wi-Fi at the time there. It had under a gigabyte of storage. And I immediately began exploring. It was my first opportunity to use AOL Instant Messenger to chat in real time with my friends. And one of the cool features it had was chatbots that you can interact with and play games with. And these were really cool. I had a desire to create my own chatbot. So I went on Google and I searched for program your own AOL Instant Messenger chatbot. And I got directed to this programming message board. And it told me, you need to learn Perl, a programming language that still used in quite a few places, not so much at Reddit. But it told me I have to learn Perl if I want to create this bot. And there were lots of sample code there, a lot of people willing to answer my pretty basic questions, as well as pointing me to documentation and tutorials. So I was able to work my way through the process and develop a bot. And then the internet started to tell me I'm doing it wrong. They explained that if I want to really be a programmer, I can't be using Windows. I need to be using Linux. So I went on Google and figured out, how do I install Linux? And back then you needed about a dozen ISOs burnt to CDs to go through the installation process. And these were big images. It took a long time to download on the slow internet. So I spent a couple of weeks downloading all these images, trying to install them on my laptop. I remember my criteria at the time was, the installer doesn't crash and I can make it through the process. My internet works, my monitor works, and my printer works. All pretty basic criteria by today's standards, but back then it was a challenge. Eventually, I landed on Ubuntu, which was the only one that actually checked all those boxes. And I just got into it. I started doing more and more programming there. It was working fine. And I started looking into what's next. One of the key selling points of Linux is it's open source. Anyone can contribute. Anyone can customize it. And if you go on Google and search for contribute to Linux or customize Linux, at the time, a lot of the results were pointing me towards packaging and maintaining of some of the software in the repositories. So I went down that rabbit hole of taking my favorite software, packaging it up so it can be easily installed by other users, fixing some small bugs in existing software. And I slowly went down the rabbit hole. I got more involved in the community, eventually ended up on some leadership councils that granted upload access to other people, granted membership in the projects. It was sort of my entry point into the open source world. From there, I got involved with Freenode, an IRC chat network catering to open source software, and then eventually with Debian, the parent Linux distribution. This brought me to college. I attended the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, where I studied computer science, and they have a student group called ACI. It's a student chapter of a larger organization there. And as part of that group, I got to help manage their fleet of servers. They had a single rack in a server room in the computer science building, and it provided some services for other students. It ran mail servers. It ran some networked file systems. It ran software to support their hacked-together soda machine at the time. But this was my first opportunity to really play around with proper servers and to see what it was like. I got to perform a migration from eConfig2 to Puppet for configuration management. I got to mess around with how do you go about installing and provisioning a wide range of servers, which is something I just never had the opportunity to do as an individual. And I found that I really enjoyed this aspect of computers. Don't get me wrong, I still enjoy programming, but having full control from everything from the hardware all the way up to my code running on top of it there, it was a cool feeling. All of a sudden, I could write the code as well as deploy it in a way that other users could take advantage. It also meant that I could solve all problems that I was facing. So for a typical software engineer, you make sure that your code can compile, you make sure there are no runtime errors, you make sure that it's performing the actions that it's meant to be doing. And that's more or less the job there, slightly oversimplified. There are classes of issues. So perhaps the underlying server goes down. your code is now no longer available. And for a lot of engineers out there, they are not in a position where they can solve this issue. They page someone else, they reach out to the support team at their cloud provider, but it's something that they typically are not able to solve. I was finally in an opportunity here where I could see the server, I could connect to it, I could see the logs of what was going on, I could analyze the metrics, and I had full control to fix the issue. So being able to split my time between problem solving at the code layer as well as at the system layer was a really cool experience. And from there, I knew this was the area I wanted to get into. I then started looking for sort of the next opportunities. We had career fairs at university there, and most companies were hiring for classic software engineers. But there were a few that were looking for cyber reliability engineers, even new grads. And I was fortunate enough to be able to land one out here in San Francisco immediately after graduation. And that's how I kicked off my professional experience as a cyber reliability engineer.
I'm really interested. Do you remember what the chatbot is that you built? Was it a game or something?
The chatbot, it was just to entertain some of my friends there. It had some of the basic games there. It had canned responses. So I remember there were a bunch of if statements effectively saying, if I receive a message that says this, reply with this fixed response. And I got very excited when I figured out I could add randomization into there so that it wasn't always sending the same response. It would pick from multiple ones. Over time, I added games. I added support for like save notes and reminders. But it was really just an opportunity for me to take what I was learning about programming in Perl and incorporate them into an actual product that my friends and I could use and have fun with.
So there's a lot of the stuff that you mentioned you were doing in your program, maybe traditionally would be handled by a system administrator, a sysadmin. What's the difference that you see between like a traditional sysadmin and a site reliability engineer?
That's another very good question. Your traditional sysadmins would typically focus on the servers. They would be running your web server. They would be running your email server, your network file systems. But they wouldn't typically get involved with writing the code. There was sort of your classic dev versus ops type split it there. And it would be up to your software engineers to write the code that would run on your sysadmin servers. Nowadays, we've realized those splits really aren't ideal if we want to be able to move at the velocity that we need to be moving at. So now there's more of a desire for our site reliability engineers to be comfortable programming, developing some of this automation. So we don't want someone having to go and manually configure the hundreds or thousands of servers that we need to run. It needs to be automated. We need to be able to write services that can allow us to scale to new heights, that allow our developers to move faster, that empower our developers to do more on their own without needing our system admins involved there. So some of that is part of the shift. It also has to do with the shift in focus. I don't need to configure my own email server anymore. Most of the mainstream cloud providers, as well as a wide plethora of third-party vendors out there, can provide email to me. They know how to solve the reputation issue and avoid my emails getting flagged as spam. They can scale to great heights. And this is their bread and butter. This is what they do day in and day out, and they are experts at it. So by relying on some of these pre-existing solutions rather than us trying to roll our own, I'm able to focus on the Reddit-specific bits. I'm able to work closer with our product teams on the things that are unique to Reddit that the cloud providers can't do for us. So it frees up my time more to do the things that matter here.
That's a great transition, because I'm very interested. You came out to San Francisco, you worked for some other companies, but tell me about when you started at Reddit, what like what you were working on, what the teams look like, kind of how site reliability engineering was done 3 years ago when you started?
So when I got hired at Reddit, I got hired as a site reliability engineer on the video team. I was reporting to a video engineering manager working alongside software engineers on the video team. Reddit had a single centralized infra team at the time, and they also were starting to explore having some other SREs within different parts of the company. Notably, like our ads organization was one of the first to have a group of SREs there. All of these SREs were not technically part of infrastructure. We were working closely with these other organizations. So myself with video, the others with ads. I was not attending infra-specific meetings. I was not given some of the access that some of our infra teams have. I was not working towards the OKRs that were coming out of our infra teams. Instead, my goals were to empower the video team to launch the services, to maintain their services, and to accomplish their goals. So this was an interesting situation to be in because the video team, their goals were to move fast and to be empowered. They did not want to have to file help desk tickets with our infra team, wait a week or so, and hope that their task got done in a way that unblocked them. They ideally wanted me to either do the work myself or to empower them to do so and to just generally know how to speed up the process to serve as a bridge between the video team and the infra team to speak the right language, say the right things to allow the process to run smoothly. And this worked for a bit. The video team was able to operate and they were meeting their goals. But we started to see a few issues. The first was I was architecting solutions in a bit of a silo. I was working with the video team, but I did not have insights into how other teams were solving similar problems. And this meant we were solving the same problem multiple times in different ways across the company. One of our attempts to solve this problem was to launch an SRE guild. And this guild was an opportunity for all these SREs across the company, for the central infra team, for other people who had an interest in this problem space, to get together on a regular cadence. We could share the different problems we were facing in our different parts of the company, discuss our proposed solutions or our implemented solutions, get feedback, hear about how our peers have tackled similar problems. It also allowed us to align around some common problems and goals. So maybe we decided that we need to get off some legacy piece of software. We could call this out at the guild. We could identify the problem. We could encourage our various SREs across the company to try and accomplish this goal. The one thing we couldn't do was actually drive the OKRs and the roadmaps for these specific parts. This meant that the guild was very good about identifying problems, identifying the desired path forward, but rather poor on delivering on these goals.
So in addition to the guild, you said that, you know, you were working on things in a silo. Was it almost like on a volunteer basis, any sort of collaboration or code sharing or system sharing that happened? Or were there kind of an established set of tools that maybe, I don't know, the infrastructure team provided or something?
There were definitely some standardized tools and processes in place. As an example, we had a monolithic Terraform repository. Terraform's a tool released by HashiCorp that allows you to manage cloud resources as code. It gives you a way to put them into a version control system, review them the same way you might review a code change, get them approved, and deploy them in a controlled way. So Terraform was a standardized tool that we all shared, we all utilized, but we were all contributing to our own subsections within that repository. I was not touching any of the stuff that Ads was doing, but we were using the same tool. One of the other issues, though, that we started to face, or at least that I was facing with this design, was that SRE is a specialized type of engineer. I mentioned how at the time some of the product teams wanted to utilize our skill set to avoid waiting for a help desk to move faster. They appreciated this, but they were used to managing software engineers. They were used to crafting goals around software engineering side of the project. And they knew how to measure the performance there and how to properly recognize that performance. Doing so for a site reliability engineer proved to be a bit more challenging. So fast forward a bit, and we started to really try and change this up. We hired our first site reliability engineer manager, and we moved all these SREs throughout the company to report to this manager. So at this time, I'm reporting to a dedicated SRE manager. I'm on a team with other SREs, but I'm still continuing to work and support the video team, the same as I was. And this was a big win. This meant that I now have a manager who understands what I bring to the table and knows how to help me grow myself, my career, and how to ensure that my skills are being utilized in the best way possible for the company. It also meant that I'm now officially on a team with these other site reliability engineers. We can now look at the bigger picture. We can see what are these problems that were being identified by the guild previously. We could see what people are working on in their individual areas. And we can start to work in a more organized and coordinated way. We can make sure that we're tackling the same problem at the same time. We have a manager that can push back on some of these other product teams and say, we need to allocate resources in the upcoming cycle to meeting these goals that we're presenting. So this was a big improvement for site reliability engineering at Reddit. This move also meant that we were now part of the infrastructure organization, which allowed us to work closer with some of our sibling teams that were popping up at the time. This meant that we were able to really start to craft a vision for what does infrastructure as a whole look like at Reddit. We were able to start fixing some of these longstanding reliability problems in a very systematic way, in a very organized way, in a way that was being monitored by leadership and where we could actively go and approach teams that were not playing ball and influence their roadmaps and get the site in a better state.
So you mentioned, this big change happened. You started reporting to a site reliability engineering manager. I'm curious, the work that primarily you were doing was still, I'm guessing at that time, for the video team. And so if they needed you to get access or set up some alerts or scaling rules or something for their things, that was probably still your day-to-day tasks that you were working on. So I'm curious how the new SRE alone priorities were balanced just from your perspective with the everyday work. Was it like video came first or SRE came first, or how did that all work?
You're spot on, right? Even with this move to reporting directly to an SRE manager, most of my day-to-day was still spent supporting the video team. I don't remember the exact breakdown, but the vast majority of my time was still spent working towards video-driven goals and any of their needs. We were told to set aside a small fraction of our time to work towards common infra problems. This wasn't always the most successful. Some of the parts of our organization had more needs than others, and it was just hard to find the time to work on anything else. We slowly started to realize at this point that we weren't in a scalable position. The video team was continuing to grow, and one set reliability engineer is not enough to support that entire organization. We started looking into options at this point. We played around with assigning additional site reliability engineers to some of these teams and trying to get to a point where we could view these as flexible engagement. So perhaps Nathan was on the video team for now, but if a larger need arose somewhere else in the company, we can move Nathan there. We tried this approach out for a bit, once again, to some mixed results. Eventually, the next iteration was, let's not put SREs on specific teams or with specific departments. Let's try and group a couple of closely related departments within the company together and then have a team of SREs supporting them. The idea was this would allow us to get out of the critical path for some of the smaller teams. It would force us to naturally empower those engineers to do more stuff on their own to get us out of that critical path without making it impossible for them to meet their goals. It also meant that we had more SREs working together. So you weren't reliant on just, does Nathan know the ideal problem? We could actually swap in an SRE who had more experience with the specific problem at hand, or have multiple SREs pair on a problem, depending on the urgency and what else was on our radar. We also started to change to a more project-driven approach at this time. So rather than just taking on whatever tasks happen to come up day in and day out, we really wanted to put thought into what projects are we working on? Are we tackling the right ones? What is the actual priority of these different projects? And what sort of timeline do we need to operate under? So that helped to really allow us to be pragmatic about how we allocated work, where we put our limited SRE resources. And it worked for quite some time. The current stage that we're at, we're really trying to have SREs working on broader infra-focused problems, things that rope up into the SRE teams, OKRs, and goals for the quarter. We still support other teams through various means and engagements, but our goal is to empower them to do more and more on their own, to allow them to move fast with appropriate levels of support and guardrails in place to ensure that they're following the best practices and patterns that our infra teams and other folks are establishing.
That's cool. I'm interested. You talked a lot of process changes, a lot of like organizational changes in terms of like empowering teams and stuff. I'm very curious, what are some of the kind of technical ways that you have, or that the site reliability engineering org has like made that possible?
In terms of technological means, I mentioned earlier, we put a lot of resources into the incident response process. Some of that has taken the form of creating better automations there and doing trainings with teams. So now, if an on-call engineer thinks that there is something seriously wrong, they have the necessary training and the tooling to declare an incident, to coordinate the response, to escalate the incident to one of our SREs or another trained individual if necessary, and to really just drive the incident response process themselves, many times with no SRE involvement whatsoever. We've done work around the reporting side of things, and SLOs are the service level objectives that I called out earlier. We have tooling in place to allow these SLOs to be defined. We have processes and tools in place to allow us to generate reports on a regular cadence to review a team's progress and to make sure that we're continuing to trend in the right direction. We've done work around the infrastructure management as well. So now we have tooling so that developers are empowered to create a pull request for their infrastructure change in that Terraform repository I called out before. And we use a tool called Atlantis that will show them the plan for what will their changes actually do when deployed. We have a lot of guardrails in place around the review and approval process. And once their change is approved by everyone, they are able to deploy it themselves to production or whatever environment they want. And all that is combined with a good story around metrics, monitoring, observability, so that they have the ability to look at, is there a change operating as expected? Did it break anything? And all this has empowered our developers to move a lot faster with less direct involvement from our SREs.
The SRE model, it sounds like, you know, now you can be more deliberate and focused around the ways that kind of the, you know, Reddit is built and the infrastructure and stuff like that. But what my mind goes to is that these tools that you're using, you know, they're not static. So obviously there's a new versions that come out. Sometimes you stop using Terraform, and I don't know what are some alternatives, but you mentioned a Puppet thing earlier that you did at school. So, you know, there's always new tools and there's always new versions and stuff. So now you've got a situation where there's not just an infrastructure team, there's not just an SRE team, literally almost any engineer at the company would be able to use these things. How in the world do you move to new tools? How do you like upgrade versions of these things when your kind of your blast radius is wider than ever?
These wider changes are definitely a challenge. The tooling continues to evolve in this space, and there isn't one single approach that we use. We've played around with some batch changes where we will cut a number of automated pull requests for all these different services or parts of our infrastructure. We will then have the individual software engineers who are the code owners for those areas review the change. And if everything looks good, we might have them deploy the change as well. This helps distribute sort of the review workload and allows to do some minor upgrade work there. We have other classes of upgrades and migrations where it might need a little more manual effort. And in those cases, we will often rely on the fact that our SREs are really still at the intersection of infrastructure and our various product teams. We have a lot of good relationships there. And we're in a position where we can go to these teams and say, we have identified that this migration or upgrade is necessary for the overall good of the company. Here is an example of the work involved. Here is a detailed procedure that you can follow. Here are rough deadlines that we're operating under and how we view it relating to some of the other goals that have been communicated to you or that are on your roadmap. And we'll look to those teams to help drive these migrations within their own services there, and then offer ourselves up for support if they run into any hurdles along the way. The final way that we try and do a lot of this stuff is by concentrating our efforts around sort of the foundation for this tooling. And that could take a few forms. At a very basic level, we might create some automated checks. So maybe we finish migrating away from a certain tool. We might create an automated check to catch any regressions of a team either intentionally or unintentionally reintroducing that tool to our stack. And those tend to help. It gives a nice friendly message to the developer about what's going on and allows us to solve the issue early on in the process. We also will try and define patterns. So instead of having engineers writing raw Terraform, perhaps we create modules for some of these common patterns. And this means that we can control the module, we can control the version of any providers it's using or any of the design practices it uses. And now the ask to developers is upgrade to the latest version of the module and you get all of these other benefits for free. So it's a very straightforward upgrade. They don't need to know anything about the underlying internals. That's all handled by our infra teams. So abstracting away to some of these patterns or these other higher level constructs so that for developers, all they're doing is bumping a version number. Or in some cases, they might not need to do anything and they'll just get all this for free, perhaps on the next deployment. It really depends on the nature of the upgrade and the level of risk perceived there and the complexity.
So Reddit is one of, you know, one of the largest companies in terms of volume and stuff and the world in terms of traffic. And so you know, obviously, there have been a lot of new things that Reddit has, or a lot of changes that Reddit has gone through in terms of site reliability engineering. How is the company and your team kind of spreading the word or evangelizing our experiences, and how are we kind of like helping others learn from our mistakes, other than this podcast, of course?
We've put out a couple of blog posts on the Reddit Eng blog subreddit. There was a blog post not too long ago covering some of the changes we've gone through around site reliability engineering by Anthony Sandoval there. We've done a couple of talks at some conferences about some of the lessons we've learned. I gave a talk at the Southern California Linux Expo earlier this year. We have a few folks speaking at the upcoming SREcon in Europe. And these conferences provide a nice venue for knowledge sharing. We also have folks who are involved in various source projects and communities, either as maintainers or contributors or just active members of the community. And these provide other forums for us to share some of the issues we faced, some of the solutions we've implemented, and just discuss the space in general.
So you mentioned that you've worked on a bunch of stuff, including video in Our Place. What are you working on these days that you're allowed to say publicly?
Well, I've done a lot of work around IAM compliance in recent times. This typically involves controlling what permissions do we give to our various engineers within Reddit? How do we make sure they have the ones necessary to do their job, while not giving them stuff that they don't need that would give them access to very sensitive data? How do we make sure that when people leave the company, all their access is revoked as it needs to be there? How do we do this in a way that is convenient and allows developers to request additional permissions without having to wait a week for that help desk type approach that I called out earlier? So this has been an area I've played around with quite a bit recently, working closely with some of our security teams. On the infrastructure as code side as well, I continue to work to empower our developers. I've worked closely with some of our infra foundations teams to codify patterns. What do we think it looks like to launch a database at Reddit? How do we codify this in a way that it's very easy for a developer to spin up a Reddit-shaped database? They still have the power to deviate, to customize to fit their specific needs, but we don't give them quite enough control to cause any serious problems on their own there. So we make it very easy to do the right thing and hard to break things. These sorts of patterns have been an area I've been spending a lot of time thinking about, working with various stakeholders to roll out in a wider range there, as well as just trying to automate away more of the manual SRE involvement. So how can we continue to work to remove SRE from being a blocker and a necessary part of different critical flows in the company, and instead empower developers to do more on their own? Once again, freeing us up to work on some of the more important problems that can't be as easily automated.
Well, great. Well, thank you for sharing everything about SRE at Reddit and about yourself, Nathan. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
So what do you think? Does it sound cool to build Reddit, one of the largest sites on the internet? If so, check out our open positions at www.redditinc.com/careers. And to get more behind-the-scenes info, check out Reddit's engineering blog at reddit.com/r/redditeng. And that's it for now. See you in the next episode of Building Reddit. Building Reddit is an official podcast from Reddit. This episode was produced by Ryan H. Lewis and Connor Cook. Thanks for listening.